7,000 meters, and is specifically engineered to achieve what Project Mohole could not. They want to penetrate the Mohole discontinuity and sample the Earth's upper mantle. So the vessel's technical specifications are tailored for the most extreme environments on Earth, and it has a range of 15,000 nautical miles and self-sustainability window of about 120 days, allowing it to operate unrestricted in waters, including polar regions, while withstanding, you know, typhoon conditions with winds up to 150 miles an hour. Let me drop it. So some of the groundbreaking technologies that are on this vessel are actually really groundbreaking. They feature the world's first hydraulic lifting rig capable of both high-pressure oil exploration and delicate core sampling, and it has a top-drive lifting capacity equivalent to 3 to 4 Boeing 747 jets. Now, to maintain the borehole integrity at a depth of about 11 kilometers, the ship employs an advanced version of riserless mud recycle, so RMR, so an RMR-type system. And this system allows for the reuse and recycling of drilling fluids, which not only improves drilling efficiency in deep water, but also mitigates the environmental impact by preventing the discharge of mud and cuttings into the seafloor. The interior of the vessel houses 9 specialized laboratories, including geochemistry, microbiology, and paleomagnetism, lined with permalloy plates to prevent magnetic interference with sensitive experiments. So this integration of a smart ship system capable of monitoring 20,000 sensors simultaneously allows for the real-time analysis of core samples as they're retrieved from the depths below. Now, the primary mission of the Mengxiang is to serve as the cornerstone for what the Chinese dub as a new era of international scientific collaboration. So following the conclusion of the International Ocean Discovery Program, IODP, and the retirement of the American vessel George Resolution, China intends to use their ship to revive unfinished global expedition proposals. And the scientific objectives are ambitious, right? They want to retrieve mantle samples to study plate tectonics, oceanic crust evolution, and ancient marine climates. Let me drop it. Victor Alpha 3, Victor Whiskey X-ray 4D. So the idea is that by targeting regions in the Pacific or Indian Oceans where the oceanic crust is produced by fast-spreading ridges, scientists hope to establish a representative model of the Earth's architecture. So these samples of mantle peridotite could provide direct evidence of how the Earth's interior recycles chemicals or elements and how the core-generated magnetic field has evolved over billions of years. And the technical challenges of deep earth drilling, while they're formidable and center on the extreme physical conditions of high pressure, high temperature environments, this is one of the problems that they need to overcome. So as the drill bit descends, the geothermal gradient causes temperatures to rise significantly, often exceeding 200 degrees Celsius at depths beyond 10 kilometers. And these temperatures can lead to the thermal degradation of drilling fluids, causing them to lose their viscosity and fail to carry rock cuttings back to the surface. Furthermore, the other problem you run into is that the intense overburden pressure at these great depths where the weight of miles of rock is concentrated can cause the borehole to collapse or the rock to flow into the hole like plastic. So to counter this, engineers have to use specialized materials such as titanium alloy drill rods and diamond-encrusted bits and maintain a precise balance in mud weight to prevent kicks. And a kick is when you have an influx of formation fluid or losses, so fluid disappearing into the rock. So it's a very, very complicated process, and it's a very delicate balance that they have to maintain. Now, the other considerations that deep earth exploration projects do pose significant risks to people and environments on the surface, so most notably through induced seismicity. So while scientific drilling itself is rarely the direct cause of major earthquakes, the dispersal of wastewater produced during drilling and hydrocarbon extraction is a well-documented trigger for seismic events. When you have large volumes of fluid that are injected deep into the disposal wells, the pore pressure in the subsurface increases. This pressure can counteract the frictional forces holding the geological fault together, essentially lubricating the fault and allowing it to slip. This mechanism has been compared to an air hockey table where the puck, you know, the rock mass moves freely once the air pressure, fluid pressure, is applied. In the United States, for example, wastewater injection related to oil and gas production has been linked to thousands of earthquakes in states like Oklahoma, including a magnitude 5.8 event in 2016 that caused structural damage on the surface. And beyond the seismicity, deep drilling operations involve other surface dangers, particularly regarding environmental contamination and public health. The process of drilling can release toxic gases like hydrogen sulfide or methane, which must be managed through flaring or contaminant prevention to limit air quality degradation. So studies funded by the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, NIEHS, have indicated that communities living within 2 kilometers of active unconventional oil and gas wells face higher risks of childhood leukemia, asthma exacerbations, and low birth weight in infants as a result of exposure to these drilling operations. Let me drop it. Victor Alpha 3, Victor Whiskey X-Ray 4ID. And furthermore to all these things I've mentioned, offshore operations carry the inherent risk of blowouts and oil spills, such as the Deepwater Horizon disaster we all remember, which can devastate marine ecosystems, kill hundreds of thousands of seabirds, and of course, injure marine mammals and cause long-term health problems for surviving animals. So, there are a few common myths that are surrounding the dangers of deep drilling, particularly the fear that puncturing the crust could trigger a volcanic eruption. Scientific data suggests that this is highly unlikely, as magma behaves according to the complex pressure volume temperature, the PVT relationships that exist at very deep depths. There have been at least 4 instances in Iceland and Hawaii where geothermal drilling inadvertently penetrated active magma bodies, and in each case the magma was rapidly cooled by the drilling fluids, and while some lava splatter occurred in one instance, no major eruptions were triggered, and the wells were often repaired and continued in their production of drilling. So similarly, the infamous Well to Hell hoax, which claimed the Soviet drillers at Kola heard screams from a microphone lowered into the borehole, was debunked as an urban legend. The audio was later revealed to be from a horror film, and the project stopped due to technical heat limitations, not supernatural encounters. So while they drilled deep, they did not enter Satan's lair. Still hot down there. Let me drop it. I mean, I don't know how deep you'd have to drill to get to hell, but I think it's going to have to be a little deeper, though, right? Okay. So the successful realization of the Meng Jiang's goal will depend on a few things. It's going to be managing technological and environmental risks while fostering the international cooperation necessary to sustain such a massive undertaking. And, of course, they want to integrate high-resolution data from its 3,000 square meters of laboratory space with the most advanced drilling technology ever built. And China, of course, hopes to lead a decade of exploration that will help humans understand the mantle, and whether these projects are seeking to understand the deep biosphere or discover new energy resources like gas hydrates or refine the models of plate tectonics will all be seen. But nonetheless, they represent a collective effort to understand the dynamic living systems of Earth. And as humanity reaches deeper than ever before, the lessons learned from the failures of projects like the Mohold and the endurance of the Kola super deep borehole, these actually provide foundations for a new era of discovery beneath our feet. So we'll see what happens with the project. It has been given the go-ahead. And again, it aims to actually provide samples that have never been provided before. So it's an interesting project, and we'll see what happens with it. But I thought it was very, very interesting because it's one of the it's a part of the planet that we, again, drilling into the planet, we know very little about it. Even though we're drilling all the time for oil and gas and other things, it's actually the crust and the mantle are very, very poorly understood parts of the planet. We have an idea, but we haven't had a means or a mechanism to actually prove many of the theories or hypotheses that exist. Yes, they do get bits of the mantle and stuff come up every now and then, and they can look at iron ore and look at the way the iron is oriented, and that'll tell them things about the magnetosphere, the ancient magnetosphere, et cetera, et cetera. but we have yet to actually go in there and take out a sample, right? It's a little bit like looking at, you know, looking at blood on a microscope versus looking at it in somebody's vein, right? It's very different. Anyway, that's the next project. I will send it back to you, Ken, for carrying on the net. I don't know if anybody has any comments or questions. I'm not a borehole expert. I just thought that this was very interesting. I'll send it back to you. VA 3VWX for ID.
Thank you for that, Tom. This is VA 3KX. And thanks for sharing that tonight. Interesting topic. All right. Any additional check-ins out there? If you'd like to join us, come on in. Any comments? And then we'll move on with some more topics for tonight. And this next one is about giant octopus. A giant octopus that lived during the time of the dinosaurs. Incredible find. And if you'd like to join us, comment, come on in.
Victor Echo 7, Whiskey, Zulu November, John.
This is John. I have you checked in.
Great. Thanks, Ken, and thanks for putting on the net. Always appreciate it.
And KD7, KDO.
Last station, one more time for me, please.
Kilo Delta 7, Kilo Delta Oscar. Name is Paul.
I've got you checked in. And this next one is about a giant octopus. And just to give you some comparison in a moment, just keep this in mind, the giant Pacific octopus, they get to be about 20 to 50 kilograms. That's 44 to just about 110 pounds. And 3 meters or 10 feet across. And their tentacles are all stretched out. Some of them, very rare occasion, have been much bigger than that, but the usual course of events for these is about that size. That's about the size they become. And scientists, they've identified the fossil remains of a huge octopus that likely reached about 62 feet, 19 meters long, that swam through the ocean during the Cretaceous period. And this may prove to be the largest invertebrate ever to have existed. And the jaws suggest they crushed large, hard-shelled animals. And with their size and intelligence, this made them a top marine predator. Octopus, nowadays, by all accounts, by all research accounts now, incredibly intelligent animals. So one of the few animals, quite possibly the only animal, that actually makes eye contact with humans as a way to try to communicate. And research for this was published in the journal Science. This was published Thursday, April 23rd. Dropping. And researchers are now rethinking their view on the hierarchy of oceanic animals 145 to 66 million years ago. And the discovery raises questions about the oceanic environment back then and how these animals got to be so large. Until now, the top predators were thought to be vertebrates like mosasaurs and plesiosaurs. And because of the lack of preserved evidence from soft-bodied animals, the Cretaceous has been somewhat of a mystery. And research on modern octopuses show them to be incredibly intelligent, but they're extremely difficult to study over huge scales, time scales, because they lack hard shells, nothing much to fossilize from them other than their jaws and their beak. And a recent study looked at 15 fossilized jaws of octopuses uncovered in Japan and Vancouver Island, and these finds showed two species of extinct finned octopuses. And the one was Nanaimo atempus, Jaleskii, and the second one was the Nanaimo, Tempest, Haggerty. And the first one was unearthed, the Gillespie Eye, was unearthed in Iraq going back 100 to 72 million years ago. And this pushed the oldest known octopuses back at least 15 million years, and the finned octopus is about 15 million years. And looking at the largest jaw for each species, scientists estimate the length of the Gillespie Eye to be 10 to 26 feet, 3 meters to 8 meters, and the end Haggerty